Blog Talk Radio.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, do ordain and establish this
and
Constitution,
so, my fellow Americans,
the United States of America.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do.
This nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
So sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
From the very heart of the Constitutional Republic of the United States of America, from the soul of the Bellwether State, Missouri Grassroots Radio is live.
It's live. It's Friday night. It is the long sought after Missouri Grassroots Radio Roundtable. I'm Dave. Lisa's here. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
I'm good. What a week, huh? We had the vice presidential debate. We've got a lot of debate going on the Missouri ballot initiatives. We've had some movement in the polls. Everything is looking a little bit better, huh?
Well, we're hoping. We're hoping. I like I said, I'm not really sure that I believe the polls anymore, but I don't know.
Well, how was your week?
It was really busy. It's kind of like, I think I need another day. I didn't get the stuff done I was supposed to get done.
Well, okay. Do you like take the weekend off, or are you going to do some of it tomorrow?
Oh, I have to get it done, so, you know. But I am taking some time off to go to the K&N Patriots thing on the corner. We rally there every Saturday morning. And then after that, we're having a Save Our Sheriff's Department sign wave from 12 to 2, so I'll be there.
Going to have a big crowd for that?
We're hoping. We put the word out, and I think that there are people interested from far and wide. I mean, I think it's an issue that people have become familiar with, so I'm hoping that we'll get a good turnout.
How does that feel?
How does it feel?
I mean, what's the feeling on the street about what's going to happen with that? Do you know?
Well, you know, the issue is when people hear about it and understand it, they're very much against the initiative on the ballot. So I think that as long as we have the opportunity to educate folks about it, I think that we can be successful. The problem is, and I don't think that this, I think that this was intentionally put on at the last minute so that there would not be time to educate the people about the situation and get the truth out there. So,
right.
You know, as long as the truth can be had, I think we can prevail.
How's the ballot language on that? Is it pretty fair?
It's a little dicey. Well, I wouldn't say fair. I wouldn't say dicey. I think it's just kind of generic, so that if you didn't know anything about it,
right,
you would read it and probably not think anything of it and vote for it.
But fairly neutral, you think?
Well, yeah, I guess. I don't really, you know.
Well, I mean, we'd all rather the ballot language told everybody to vote the way we wish they'd vote, but.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to accuse them of being dicey. You know, it's not Rob Parnian level.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Okay.
But it's not completely truthful either. It's not. There's not full disclosure. I don't feel there's full disclosure.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's fair. And you and I are going to talk about that in depth on Monday night on the Hour of Truth. We're going to actually, folks, get in down and dirty in St. Charles County where they threw, just at the last minute, six different initiatives onto the ballot. Just boom, 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 like dumping over a carton of eggs. And in hopes of getting their way on, like Lisa said, some issues that didn't have ample time for debate and airing out. Isn't that right, Lisa?
Yeah, that's really it. That's it in a nutshell, Dave. I mean, everything that went on the ballot went on at the last minute. They were able to get the smoking initiative off, which is good. But, you know, I had this conversation with some people this afternoon at a Pachyderm meeting. You know, it's just absolutely outrageous the way this was handled, and I feel that it's my personal opinion that it was disingenuous to deal with it in this way. And I think it's time for the people to stand up. You know, and if I have time this weekend, I'm going to write an article on it. The chair of the county council has the prerogative to put ballots before the council or not. And oftentimes, and I think you'll see this even in the state legislatures, what you'll hear is when a politician or a political group wants to put something forward, if they want to advance an initiative but they don't really have the guts to do it themselves, they'll put it before the people, air quotes, okay, and let the people decide, air quotes.
Right.
I think that is the biggest cop-out on the planet. You know, we have a representative government, okay? We put people in place to do a job, and we don't put them in place for them to have a weak spine and put it before the people. They know whether or not something has been vetted enough or something is being presented truthfully enough or, you know, things have gone through the right processes enough to whether or not it should be going on the ballot or not. And for them to say, we're going to put it before the people and let the people decide because really that's what's important, then we have a democracy. We don't have a representative government. And I think that undermines the whole structure of what we're supposed to be dealing with.
So, yeah.
That's what I heard today about this initiative. And I just I have a problem with it.
Okay. I would too, and I agree with you 100%. I've seen that same thing happen in our town of Springfield down here a lot of times where they – well, in fact, our first smoking ban initiative was one just like that. The one clean air group or whatever it was went to the city council and asked for this thing, and the city council knew that they were going to be in deep doo-doo if they just approved it. So they, like you said, sent it to the people. That way they're off the hook either way.
Right. And you know, and not that ballot initiatives should be bad, but I think they're way overused. They're abused, I think, actually. I think it's fair to say. And, you know, and in a representative-style government, I think people need to call them on it. You know, we're not putting them there to send things back to us. If we wanted a democracy, we'd have a democracy.
Well, yeah. Theoretically, ballot initiatives are what people, I mean, are something that the city council or the county commission or the elected group, whatever it is, won't act on, that the people want acted on. Initiatives should come from the people, not from the governing body. If the governing body either passes something or they don't pass something, they don't send items to the people except when the people originate that item.
Okay.
Do you see what I mean? In other words, the word initiative or the whole idea of the initiative is if you and I and 1,000 other people wanted something and the city council or the county commission wasn't acting on that, then we would start a petition drive. We would elevate that to the council and they would then have to send that to the people for a vote. It was never intended as a cop-out for elected bodies to be able to cook up these initiatives on their own. Elected bodies are supposed to legislate, debate and legislate. They're not supposed to, like as you said, you know, turn us into a democracy.
Right. And I think they're remiss in their duties.
Yes. No, I agree with you 100%. And we will get into every one of those initiatives for you folks in St. Charles County and for you listeners in the rest of the state. It'll be a very educational show because you'll be wanting to – this is becoming the trend, actually. I've mentioned a couple of times that they've done it in Springfield. And in fact, there was a different and alternate abuse of the initiative here. I spoke of this Monday night in Springfield where – some people got a sufficient number of petitions and got a significant number of signatures, enough to get a initiative together to declassify possession of certain amounts of marijuana down to a misdemeanor charges. And in Springfield, the way the city charter reads is when the city council is presented with an initiative like this, they can either send it to the people for a vote exactly the way it's written on the petition, or they can make a law the way it is on the petition. They could say, okay, 7,000 people, 8,000 people want this thing. Let's just do it. In this particular case, they went ahead and passed it because if they send something to the people and the people pass it, according to the city charter, it's 6 months before they can even go in and amend it or change it in any way. So they went ahead and passed this, and then at the next meeting, they threw it out. They rescinded it. That's another abuse of the system.
Right.
Almost tyrannical. Speaking of tyrants, you had a very interesting blog today. Talk about that for a minute.
Well, and that's another little trend that we see in municipal governments lately. And I know that I wrote a blog post several months ago. It happened I don't think it was East St. Louis, but I think it was a surrounding suburban St. Louis area, Illinois area, is daytime curfews. And I got a notice in my inbox today from HSLDA, Homeschool Legal Defense Association, for them sending out an alert for people to contact the folks in Hollister, Missouri, because Hollister, Missouri is trying to pass an initiative there for a daytime curfew for kids. And from what I understand from what I read from the notice was that kids, homeschool kids, of course, are being harassed by the local law enforcement there for being out in public during the day. Now, as you know, I'm a homeschool mom, and we don't live by the same institutional rules that institutionally schooled kids do. We have flexible schedules, and we do different things out in the community sometimes during the day. And, we are law-abiding citizens, and, there really is no reason to think otherwise. And so why are we looking? To me, let's back up a little bit. To me, it just seems a little bit heavy-handed to start questioning everybody who's running around town who's not got their kid in school to think that there's automatically something going on. When it automatically assumes that everybody should be in school. It kind of sets a precedent or an expectation that a certain lifestyle should be lived, and it's kind of a takes away your freedoms of choice.
As in anybody who's not in school at 2 o'clock in the afternoon is a criminal.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's just not the case. And even if an institutionally schooled child is not in school at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, there may be a legitimate reason for that very expectation to be happening. And why would the police be pulling over and interrogating anybody who's out in public in broad daylight without probable cause? If they're not breaking into a car or they're not loitering or, bothering a business or, if they're not being abusive in any way or haven't been reported to the police, why are they being interrogated? And evidently that's taking place in Hollister.
Yeah, it sounds like it from reading your blog. And we're going to initiate, listeners, tomorrow an MGC action item. I'm looking now to try to get I've got the email address for the mayor. I haven't been able to find the email address for the alder persons yet. Once we get that stuff together, we'll be initiating an action item and asking you all from all over the state to send an email to Hollister, to the alder persons and to the mayor, and get a voice going on this thing.
Yeah, absolutely. They need to not only hear from the people in Hollister, they need to hear from the people of Missouri. I mean, we don't do things like that in Missouri. In Missouri, we want the entire state to have a reputation where, we have the freedom to have our children homeschooled and out in public, during the day, and if we're not being otherwise disruptive, breaking the law, we want to be left alone.
That's right. And again, just like the initiative thing, I would not be on this bandwagon if the people of Hollister had said, through an initiative process, we want this done. I would think they're all crazy. I would think they're all loco. But for a representative government, for a city council or county commission to edict a law like this is just, as you said in your blog, borders on tyranny.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I can't see it any other way. So, you know, I can't imagine anybody who reads this wouldn't think that this is just completely outrageous. There's just a law for it.
I was talking with someone today, and I got an idea, Lisa. And what I want to do on an Hour of Truth here, probably after the election, since we're pretty booked up till then. But you always come along. Lisa always comes along, folks, to the Hour of Truth on Monday nights, and acts as producer and as a very generous co-host with me, and I enjoy that. But what I want to do some night, Lisa, is have you on the show in more of a guest format, because there are a lot of people who misunderstand exactly what homeschooling. I mean, there are a lot of people, even maybe in our audience, who would like to look at it, or who should be looking at it, or who just should understand it better, who misunderstand what homeschooling is all about. It's not just a bunch of people who don't want their kid to have to go to school. Homeschooling kids aren't a bunch of truants who there are standards that have to be met. Am I right?
Oh, absolutely. Missouri has very well laid out statutes regarding homeschooling. And, while we do enjoy certain freedoms that a lot of other states, you know, we're a little bit less regulated than some other states, there are some very clear guidelines that we do have to follow. So,
exactly.
It's not just a fly-by-the-seat-of-your-pants situation. And, I can talk about homeschooling till the cows come home.
Good.
My youngest child's getting ready to graduate. She's been homeschooled all the way through, so...
Great, and you've got a boy now who graduated from homeschool, who's in college.
That's right.
Yeah. So I mean, these aren't, you know, homeschool. When you hear people say, my kid was homeschooled," it's not just a parent wakes up one morning and says, "I'm damn tired of having to get up at 8 o'clock every morning and send this kid to school. I think I would just rather have him running around downtown all day long and me not have to worry about it." It's not that kind of thing at all. It's a lot of work, but it is a really lucrative, I don't want to say lucrative, but it's a nice option for to the very inadequate, very substandard government schools that we have in our country today. Whether you're looking for a Christian education, which is what a lot of people go for, or just a better education, I mean, you can't go wrong with homeschooling if you have the time and the ability to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not for everyone, but it's a lot more doable for more people than you would think. So, you know, I mean, I was very intimidated by it when I first started homeschooling, but, you know, you ease into it, and it's a great... You know, because our culture for the last 100 years has been so used to sending our kids off to an institutional school and letting somebody else take care of that, we have, you know, we've just gotten away from that centralized family bonding. And I'm telling you, when you homeschool your kids, you really are, we are able to develop, I think, you know, I don't want to bring a prejudice into this, but we really have, because we spend so much time with our kids, we really, I think, are able to develop a very unique and special close family bond there that a lot of families miss because they just don't have the quantity of time together that homeschooling families do.
Exactly. And, I mean, yeah. That's right, and I went, Lisa, last year to I heard this invitation to judge some debate and speech and forensic activity that was going on for homeschool children. There's a big, you know, because homeschool kids don't have access to some of these things, and the homeschool association or whatever it is, the big group had this forensic tournament for kids. Last year, and I actually went and listened. I didn't sign up to judge anything because at the time I didn't know very much about homeschooling. I believe it was last October or November, I didn't know. But man, you talk about some smart kids. These homeschool kids they will run rings around government school children.
Oh, and they do, and there's actually quantifiable data. You know, whenever you want to set up this show, I'll bring on, there's this quantifiable data that shows that homeschool kids just typically outperform institutionalized school kids by huge margins, huge margins.
And this is the whole, and I didn't want to make this whole show here on the about homeschooling, but we might go that far. This is one of the whole under the current agendas of Common Core and stuff like that, isn't it? I mean, they've got to get this homeschooling thing under control, or it makes them show up as the failure that they are.
Yeah, that's really it, right, in a nutshell, this whole common. And they are making huge advances toward the homeschool and private school communities because, you know, if they can't get those factions under control, it does. It just blows the Common Core and government schools programs right out of the water.
Absolutely.
Actually, I haven't heard a lot from Romney on his education policy. I'm kind of hoping that...
Did you send him... Why don't you send him one of your pledges?
Yeah, that'll get some traction.
If you go ahead and put in a plug for your Homeschooling United.
Yeah, Homeschooling United does have, and I've been a little remiss during this election season, but they do have an educational freedom pledge, where we do ask candidates and elected to sign a pledge saying that they will support homeschooling and keep it free from government regulation and mandatory testing and all of the things that go along with undermining the autonomy and success of homeschool.
And again, brothers and sisters, it isn't that. Good homeschooling parents, which 99.9% are, don't want their children tested or don't want their children to learn basically 80% of the same stuff your kids learn in a public school. It's that these standardized tests, this race to the top, this Common Core, this, what was Bush's program, No Child Left Behind, this is all, by forcing this onto the homeschool, this is all just a way to try to make your homeschool nothing more qualitatively than the public school.
Right, absolutely. And, they're having some success with it, too. It's all tied into the virtual school trend and the charter school trend. And, you know, once you know the details behind all of that, you really do think twice about the kind of education reform that's being pushed in the legislatures.
So, folks, I promise you that that one of these Mondays, shortly after the election, Lisa and I will talk about this for 60 to 90 minutes. We'll push this show so that as many of you as want to get on for just this specific topic can. We've got some other things we want to talk about tonight, so we'll get on with it. When we come back from the break, Lisa and I will talk about some things that have happened in the polls. We'll spend a little bit of time dissecting last night's debate. Was that fun or not? We'll talk a little bit about some of the Missouri ballot initiatives. We never know when Kevin or Mike or Terry or Teresa might drop by, and we could have a long and healthy discussion about some things.
Here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, it's Christmas in July and August and September. Last year on Christmas Eve, MGC paid off the department store layaway accounts of two Missouri families who were not able to provide Christmas for their children. This year, we would like to at least double that number, and in an attempt to do that by the holiday season, we're asking you to consider donating a few dollars toward that effort. We know the holiday season is the most difficult time of year to ask for donations, so we're planning ahead and asking you to give whatever you can so that a few Missouri families will be able to celebrate at Christmas. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and look for the Secret Santa page. All the details are there for you to donate by PayPal, check, or money order. Conservatives have proven to be the most generous and most benevolent people in the United States. Please help us with this very small charitable project.
His life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
We are back. It's Dave. It's Lisa. It's Friday night, and it's the Roundtable at Missouri Grassroots Radio, sponsored by Missouri Grassroots Coalition. This Secret Santa thing, Lisa, I'm excited. We're well past halfway to our goal. I think we're going to make it.
I heard about that, and yes, I'm excited too. So it'll be kind of fun to see how all that turns out for Christmas, and you know, it'll make you feel good to know that you helped keep the Christmas spirit alive for some kids who are going to wake up on Christmas morning and not be disappointed.
Absolutely. For you people that might just be listening for the first time, and if you'd like to call in, by the way, if you're a first-time listener, it's 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835. If you've been listening before, you already know that. But yeah, for anybody that isn't aware of what Secret Santa is, it's a little project that Missouri Grassroots Coalition does. It try to collect money throughout the year, and at the end of the year, on Christmas Eve, actually, we'll go to as many stores as our money allows and help as many families as our money allows. And what we'll do is we'll go into stores and we'll find the store manager, and we'll ask them to go back and find us a layaway that has toys in it that is clearly a layaway for some kids. That isn't likely to get paid off by Christmas Day, by tomorrow morning. And when we find that, then we pay that off. And the people come in and they get their toys and they take it home to their kids. And then we just disappear into the nights, hence the Secret Santa part. What a great feeling it is for us and for you. We need a couple of bucks from you. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Click on the Secret Santa button in the top menu and go there and donate us a couple of dollars, $3, $5, $100. We have $200 donors so far this year, if you want to get in on that action. Our goal this year is twice what it was last year. Last year we did $250 and we helped two families. This year we're shooting for $500 and four families. We'd like to double that every year. It looks like we might make it this year. And so we're looking forward to hearing from you and seeing what you can do. Lisa, and we talk about this every time we talk about it, Lisa, but, you know, as conservatives, we say over and over and over again, you know, we don't want the government choosing our charity for us. But if we're going to be able to toe that line, we darn well better be ready to do it ourselves, hadn't we?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, the government has been very, very aggressive in trying to eliminate charities throughout the last few years. And I think that, you know, that is just absolutely the last place you want to go. If you want to do anything to piss off the Democrats,
That's right.
Be charitable over the holiday season.
Yeah, make them feel not needed anymore. And that's what we can do. We can make the government charity not needed, and then we can also be going about our mission of making the president irrelevant to our everyday lives, and that's part of what we're headed for. When we, you know, I still get a kick out of it, and we do it. We all do it. I do it. You do it. Everybody in the grassroots does it. We all talk about President Obama and Mitt Romney in terms of budgets and deficits and borrowing and spending, and the fact of the matter is that our goal here is to educate people and bring about a time again in our country where those kind of things have nothing to do with the President of the United States, and really where we understand that they don't have anything to do with the President of the United States. I mean, you know, we keep using the word Obamacare. Well, it's not Obamacare. It's McCaskill Care and it's Reed Care. The Congress did this. The President didn't just wake up one morning and say, we're going to have Obamacare. You have to look at your elected representatives for that.
Yeah, I don't know. I might disagree with that. I think the President sets an agenda, you know.
Well, he shouldn't.
Yeah, maybe. Well, yeah, in this day and age, he shouldn't, maybe, but he does. And, you know, I want a president to come in now and set an agenda for small government.
Yeah, yeah. And the best way a president could do that is say, you know, your budget doesn't have anything to do with me. Write a damn budget and send it up here. I'll sign it. Or not.
Right.
You know, that's right. That's right. You know, write a health care bill, send it up here. I'll sign it or not. Do something about Social Security, send it up here. I'll sign it or not. But it isn't mine to do. It's yours to do. And I'm tired of you passing those things off on the President of the United States like they were his duty. And likewise, if we would get some senators and congressmen with some backbone to say, hey, get your hands off this, Mr. President. It's not got anything to do with you.
Well, right. I mean, I think every level of government has forgotten just exactly where their boundaries are.
That's right. And it's all kind of run together. What did you think of the debate? Who won?
Oh, I see. You know, everybody says that it's a draw. I think that Ryan won. I think he won hands down because, you know, I thought substantively he was very good. You know, when Joe Biden wasn't being a complete ass, I thought he probably made some very good and deliberate left-wing substantive points too. However, style counts. And, you know, anybody who saw that debate last night and watched the calamity that went on for an hour and a half, I mean, Joe Biden was just absolutely out of the blocks, ridiculous, crazy. I was insulted by it, actually.
Well, yeah, and you know, I think he made some great left-wing points, too, but great left-wing points aren't really points. Great left-wing points are say the word millionaire and billionaire enough times, say the word middle class enough times, and you score points. You know, keep propagating the class warfare, and you score points with your base. That is the socialist agenda. Eat the rich, feed the poor, and that's really all you've ever got to do to make points with those people.
Well, you know, and that's fine. I mean, that's what debates are for. But, you know, the thing that I found so telling about the debate was that, well, for one thing, the moderator was horrible. She allowed the debate to get completely out of hand and did absolutely nothing to keep it under control and keep it on track. And, you know, of course, and I think that was the strategy, to be honest with you. I think that, you know, the whole strategy Joe Biden went in with was shout him down so that he can't get his points out and wear him down and fluster him to see if he crumbles. Well, he didn't crumble. He did a really good job and that's why I give Paul Ryan extra points, because he did a really good job under the most ridiculous of circumstances. You know, I like Paul Ryan just fine. I don't really see him as presidential material. I think he's a little young and a little green, but, you know, in a pinch, he's my preference over Biden. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if anyone looked at that debate last night and someone from the right should have just made this point either going into the debate or shortly after. If you looked at that debate last night and said nothing more, forget anything that anyone said, any substance of anything anyone said, and just look at style and say, one of these two guys is going to be, God forbid something happen, a heartbeat away from the presidency, take your pick.
Right.
I mean, it's pretty.
Yeah, and sound easy choice.
It's easy. Yeah, it gets easy at that point. I mean, Biden came off as maniacal. To make it good, and just absolutely
childish.
Well,
childish.
Yeah, I was trying to think of something stronger, like psychotic or sociopathic or something like that. And again, you know, again we see exactly the same thing we saw last time, and we'll always see. And that is the factcheck.org outfits coming out with their fact checks. And all of these fact check agencies have absolutely been co-opted or were created maybe even as instruments for the left-wing socialist agenda. Every one of them tried to find and actually found, here comes your air quotes, the lies in Paul Ryan's and basically the fact checkers are the ones lying. Factcheck.org, and I've got it right here in front of me now. the first thing they homed in on was Ryan saying that that Obama's increase in taxes for the wealthy while leaving taxes alone for the middle class, which is what Obama is actually proposing. He isn't proposing a cut for middle class, like he says. He's proposing that next year you'll pay the same tax if you're in the middle class, and that is below $100,000. No, I'm sorry, below $200,000. And if you are above $200,000 in income, your taxes will go up. That's his proposition with the way he wants to do the high end of the quote-unquote Bush tax cuts. And Ryan came on and said, you know, he's 53% of the people who are going to be affected by this tax are small businessmen. He said it would cost 710,000 jobs. And Joe Biden came back and said, let me tell you some of those small businesses he's talking about. He's talking about hedge funds that make $600 million to $800 million a year. That's what they're calling small businesses. And you know what? Biden is right, and factcheck.org said, pants on fire, Ryan. But the fact of the matter is that Ryan is right. Ryan is absolutely 100% right when he says 53%. Now, some of that 53% of the people who are going to be tragically affected by this tax are, in fact, hedge funds. But hedge funds aren't 53% of the small businesses in this country. Hedge funds are about 1% of the business, small business in this country. Businesses that make $600 to $800 million a year are about 3% of all the small business in this country. The people that are going to be paying more tax and cutting workforce as a result of that tax are your dry cleaner, the guy that repairs your car, the person who sells you ice cream at the Baskin Robbins. These are people who make $275,000 a year, hire 8, 9, 10 people that President Obama wants to seriously increase tax on.
Well, yeah, and that's going to just, you know, send us into a deeper recession. You know, I've never figured out, I know that there are criteria, I've never figured it out, and I don't know what they are, of us not being in a recession and how we haven't been in a depression.
I did know this at one time, and I'm just talking off the top of my head now, but I believe it is three consecutive quarters of 2% growth or better. The recession is over.
Oh, okay. Have we had that?
Our recession is not over. Nope. And I actually went and looked up the definition of recession and depression one time and knew that, but I don't know it anymore. I do know from when I looked it up that we in fact did not technically qualify as being in a depression, but we clearly technically qualified as being in a recession, and Obama is right. We clearly qualified as being in a recession before he came into office. There's no arguing about that. The tail end of the Bush years were dramatically bad. But
after 4 years, I just don't think that you can refer to the Bush years anymore.
That's exactly right. And as Ryan clearly pointed out and truly pointed out last night, two of those years with absolutely anything the president wanted. The first 2 years with a veto-proof majority in the House of Representatives and a huge majority in the Senate.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I'm tired of hearing it.
Yeah.
Let's just go vote.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You're tired of this whole thing, aren't you? You know, what's interesting is that all of the pundits agree, and I'm telling you, for twice in a row, if you want to talk about Biden being a loser last night, for the second time in a row, his own spin, the spin of the left-wing media pundits, was against the Democratic contender. All of the left-wing media pundits, not all, the majority of the left-wing media pundits said he looked bad. He made some points, but they were lost. They were totally lost in his ridiculous behavior.
Yeah, his delivery was just bad.
Yeah.
And you know, a point I wanted to make too, and and I'm guilty of this as well. I mean, I have been wanting to see a little fire come out of the Romney campaign. I've been wanting to see Romney stand up and fight back a little harder than he's been fighting, and you know, because he's been so roundly attacked and I think taken some hits from it up until the debates. I think that the strategy that they're using now, where they're kind of taking the high road, not sinking to the level of wallowing in the mud with the pigs, I think is working for them. I think they look more professional. I think they look more presidential and more in authority of the situation. And I think the people like that.
Oh, I think so, too. I think they need to save, they need to save some big bombs in case they need them. But for now, there's no reason to even fire a gun when the other guy has got his own gun pointed at his own head.
Yeah,
the whole Democratic side of the election process is coming unraveled. It is, and you know, I hate to sound like Glenn Beck, you know, who always says, "Hey, I forecasted this 5 years ago, and I'm such a prophet." But we said here on this show back in December, January, We said at Missouri Grassroots Coalition in January, but we didn't start the show till April, did we? But we said in our first week on this show that was going to be a problem for Barack Obama, is that when he got up there and started talking about how he'd created jobs and he'd make things better, he had made things better, and he had turned things around, that he was going to be talking to a nation of people who were living a different story.
Absolutely. And I also kind of find it interesting that the tactic in the past couple of election cycles, which has been to so roundly and wildly and emotionally criticize the Republican Party and the Republican campaign, is not really working for them this time. The people are much more comfortable with a calmer, more reasoned, steady approach than this hysterical, the earth's on fire, you know, and everything's going to blow up if you elect a Republican strategy.
And Romney did a great job, I thought, in the first debate, and I hope he keeps pounding this point in the next two debates and in his appearances. He did a good job of something I don't believe Ronald Reagan even was ever able to do, and that was showing people in America the idea behind the big pie and the little pie.
Okay, explain.
Well, I mean, you know, the whole principle of Reaganomics and of Romney's economic plan is that people have always assumed, and this is the theory that holds liberal and socialist politics together, is that the economy is a pie, and it's a fixed sized pie. And so in order for you and me to get a bigger piece, someone has to get a smaller piece. You know, the pie is cut. Some people have a bigger piece of the pie, and some people have a smaller piece of the pie. And in order for us with a smaller piece of the pie to get a bigger piece, someone has to get a smaller piece.
Right.
And the whole capitalist venture idea is that the pie size isn't fixed, that by increasing the size of the pie, that is, by increasing the economy, the wealth of the nation, everyone, including the government, gets a bigger piece of pie.
Right. And the Democrats don't like that theory.
They don't. They don't like the theory. It's been proven true over and over and over again. In fact, they don't like the theory so much that here is a law that a lot of people don't recognize. And this is the law that came into play when Barack Obama says, "Okay, Mitt Romney, listen. If we cut taxes as much as you say, then we have to figure that we're going to have to raise taxes on the middle class to pay for these tax cuts that you gave the upper class, because there just isn't going to be enough money. And do you know that when the Office of Military Budget, or when the Government Accounting Office, or when anybody in the public or private sector who is commissioned by the government to do a study on the impact of a tax plan, that those people cannot, by law, take into account any changes in behavior that are going to occur as a result of that tax plan. So if you go to the Congressional Budget Office and you say, okay, I have a tax plan that cuts taxes on everyone by 13%, what effect is that going to have on the economy? The Congressional Budget Office can say, okay, it's going to cut revenue by this much, and it's going to do this, and it's going to do that. But they cannot, by law, take into account the fact that when you cut taxes by 13%, more people are going to get hired, so more people are going to pay taxes. They cannot take into account the fact that the behavior of the rich investor is going to change when his taxes change.
Okay.
So that is how all of these studies, all of these tax plan studies, get tilted toward the socialist agenda, because we all know.
Because they don't take it a step farther that the congressional
right.
budget is tonight.
We all know that when taxes come down on the rich, that rich people are going to spend more money investing in business. We all know that when taxes come down on the rich, that the rich people are going to hire more. We all know, and again, when I say rich people, I am talking about the Democrat socialist rich. I'm talking about people who make $200,000 a year. I'm talking about your mechanic. I'm talking about your dry cleaner. I'm talking about your grocer. I'm not talking about Goldman Sachs. I'm talking about the people who make America run. When their taxes come down to a reasonable level, they will grow their business. They will hire more people. And when more people are hired, when my taxes come down, Lisa, and when your taxes come down, what are we going to do? We're going to spend more money.
Right.
And when we spend more money, the dry cleaner and the grocer have to hire more people. And their taxes have come down, so they will hire more people.
And trickle down.
And none of those things are allowed to be taken into account when you just take some raw numbers into the Congressional Budget Office and say, oh, hey, here, tell me what this tax plan is going to do. And that is just bad. Well, I think I agree with you. I think by a squeaker, Ryan came out the better looking candidate last night. I don't think, however, that most people care. I don't think it's going to make a difference in the polls. I don't think a lot of people pay attention to the vice presidential debate. A lot of people watched it for entertainment, but quite frankly, I was three-fourths of the way through that debate, and I said, my gosh. You know what? The coolest thing last night, Lisa, I came on to Kevin's show for just a little bit to listen in. That was right about the time that the debate was starting. And then I went – my wife had taken over the den, and Beauty and the Beast was on, or some god-awful girl stuff out there. And so I just sat in here in my office, and I found the coolest site. I found a site, and I'll send it to you if you're interested sometime, but because I bookmarked it, that actually took the debate and translated the debate like a court reporter would as it was occurring into text. So it was a transcript of the debate that was being filled in as the debate was going on. And what was cool about that is I could sit here with my computer on, and I could watch all of the tweets from the people I like to follow, and watch the debate, and watch the Facebook remarks that were going on, and I could watch all of this at the same time because I wasn't missing anything in the debate while I was tweeting or watching tweets or responding on Facebook, because I could just go back and catch up the four or five sentences I had missed. It was absolutely the coolest thing that I've ever seen.
Well, it sounds like multitasking to the most highest expert.
Yeah. It was really fun.
How do you transcript when people are talking over each other? There was a lot of that going on.
There was a lot of that, you know, and it was really cool because I've never been in any kind of law business before, or any kind of medical business where medical transcriptionists write notes from things as things are said. But it was really cool because you could see the interruptions. I mean, you know, the transcriptionist would be writing something that Ryan was saying, and then would go dot dot dot, and then you would see Biden, and Biden would stop talking, start talking, and. It was just really fun because sometimes there would be four words from Biden and then Ryan, four words from Ryan, and then, you know, down about six or seven lines of that there would be a sentence or two from Raddatz, and who I agree with you did a horrible job. And the what time she did get involved again, she was clearly in the tank for Obama. She got involved in trying to get some control every time Ryan was actually making strong points. Did you notice that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, she did absolutely nothing to step on Biden at all, and she did jump on Paul Ryan every time. I would agree. It's orchestrated. It's so obviously orchestrated that way before they even get there. So you know that there it was something that was absolutely planned. I don't know. It's just disgusting.
I mean, you knew the abortion question was going to come up. You knew Ryan was going to take a beating on that, and he did. But I thought he got through it fairly well. I don't think he got through it without damage. I believe that women had started coming. Well, in fact, polls indicated that women had started actually coming to Romney after the last debate. But now the war on women is back on, and a lot of those will leave again. I wish there was just a way that the Republicans could stand up and say, well, we're not going into that, but they can't because they insist, on making it a prominent part of their platform every damn year. And ought to just stay away from it.
Well, until we get, you know, I mean, even conservatives are guilty of this. Until we get people to understand what small government really means,
right?
People are going to still consider that you need to legislate morality.
I agree. I love Cynthia Davis to pieces, but that's the one area her and I are always going to disagree.
All movement out there now of people who are really trying to get it, and they're, because you do see movements out there of conservatives going back to their churches and telling them, you know, this is what we want to see on Sunday morning. We want you to take these kinds of issues, and we want you to talk about these kinds of values, and we want to strengthen this part of the church that has just totally left the dialogue.
Right.
And I think when, if they can be successful in doing that, I think it'll go a long way into helping the grassroots movement turn the entire situation around, and helping to trim the size of government, because there are just some areas of government that they've gotten too far afield away from the Constitution.
I agree. Yeah, on both sides. Yeah. I think Ryan got hurt a little bit there, but I don't think it's going to be noticeable. And I think the next debate, if I'm not mistaken, Thursday night is going to be on foreign affairs. And I think that's going to be a wash as well. I think it is. I mean,
think it'll be a draw.
Romney, I think it's going to be a wash as far as the polls go. I don't think it'll be a draw. I think again, Romney is going to be able to tromp all over Obama. I mean, he's got a dead ambassador on his hands. He's got a very, very recent hearing where it was clear I mean, even in statements from the government themselves, that they told this guy, no, you cannot have any security in the one of the most dangerous cities in the whole world on 9/11. We have clear evidence that that the government, the administration, made every effort to continue week after week to try to divert this thing to some ridiculous tape when it was clear to them that that was not the case. So, no, I think Obama gets his behind handed to him. But what I think is we won't see a lot of difference in the polls because I don't think the average American is concerned about that. That they ought to be. I'm going to grant you that. But I don't think they are. I think the average American is concerned that their kid is 3 to 6 months from not having supper on the table. That the husband is 3 to 6 months from being unemployed. That the family is within a year of losing their home. I think that's what people are concerned about.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I have a tendency to think that there's a larger. I think that the switch over to the foreign affairs, I think it's getting larger because of how drastic it's getting. I mean, I think people are worried about, you know, are their sons going to have to go to war kind of a deal.
Right. Well, you know
what? National security, you know, I mean, and it plays a huge part in the economy. So I think that there are more, while it's not as widespread as it should be, I think that there are more people paying attention to it.
See, and if people are concerned that their sons are going to have to go to war, I think Obama wins because he's the one standing up there telling you, telling them, hey, your sons aren't going to have to go to war. Biden is saying, hey, come on, calm down. Iran isn't about to get a nuclear bomb. You know, Barack Obama is saying the one saying, hey, we can be friends with everybody in the world. We don't have to have these wars. If instead Romney can turn that fear into, you know, our home is under attack. Your sons are not going to have to go to war in Afghanistan if we don't turn this thing around. They're going to have to defend Chicago and New York City. If he can turn it into that, and that, those are realistic scenarios. That's not stretching anything. Then we win the foreign affairs fight. But if it's just, hey, your kids aren't going to have to go to war, then Obama wins because he's making all those promises.
I think it's more than that. I really do. I think it's more than that because I think the threat of a nuclear war situation is huge. I think people are worried about that. And I do believe that the, you know, whether or not we go to war and the whole situation in the Middle East plays a huge part on the economy. And I think that's, you know, ultimately I think the election boils down to the economy, and that's part of it. So that's what I mean, I think that the people will pay attention to the foreign policy because of the economy.
Well, I sure hope so. I felt like, you know, they talked a little bit about the economy last night, and then they got into this foreign policy stuff, and I thought, Jesus Christ, you're losing 3/4 of your audience right here because people just, they're just not paying any attention to this. The coolest thing, the other thing that I had open, the other screen that I had open was a live feed from the FNS, what group? Anyway, the group this group of 50 people who actually has a meter in their hand and they're judging their emotions, their reactions as things are going on, and I had a live feed from that open in a screen, and it was really cool. People were falling asleep when they got too deeply into, you know, whether or not Iran had a nuclear war, whether or not Bibi Netanyahu was friends with Barack Obama more than he was friends with Mitt Romney. People don't care. People just don't care. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. It's Lisa and Dave on Friday night. It's the MGC Roundtable, sponsored by Missouri Grassroots Coalition. If you want to advertise with Missouri Grassroots Coalition, listen up here and find out how to do that. We'll be back.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
This is the Grassroots Minute. We have just been alerted by the Missouri Family Network to Secretary of State Robin Carnahan and Attorney General Chris Koster of misleading voters. Yes, 50 judges facing retention voters across Missouri are not publicly posted on the state's website designed for that very purpose. Scores of citizens were angered a few weeks ago when Robin Carnahan failed to update the website for many days following the Cole County Court ruling that her ballot question on Proposition E, Obamacare health care exchange, was misleading. After the court reworded the ballot question, she saw no need to correct the state's website within any reasonable time frame. Even then, she did not change the fair ballot language to reflect the newly worded question for weeks until pressured by the same group to tutor the court in the first place. Carnahan and Koster drafted the biased ballot question for Constitutional Amendment 3, seeking to tweak the Missouri nonpartisan court plan. It would seem they want to mislead voters to oppose any changes to this provision of the Missouri State Constitution. It is this provision which dictates how certain Missouri judges, including all higher courts, are to be appointed rather than elected. After serving on the bench, these judges face a yes or no retention vote, but with no campaigns or public scrutiny. As a result, voters are left in the dark over such judges' performances on the bench and our qualifications to serve. There are no challengers or invested campaigns to bring forth any information one way or the other about these judges. Now, it would appear that our current Secretary of State and Attorney General do not want voters to know ahead of time that these judges will even be appearing on the ballot. Thank goodness Carnahan is late in office. The Koster is challenged by Ed Martin in the November 6th election. We know who we're going to vote for. I'm Terry Varner for the Grassroots Minute.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Dave, this is Lisa. This is Missouri Grassroots Radio, sponsored by Missouri Grassroots Coalition. If you'd like to follow up on that ad you just heard and get some advertising going on Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a very, very, very small donation buys you ad space on both the website and a mention as often as you want right here on the radio program. Lisa, you know what you got coming up this week on the Culture Vigilante Wednesday night?
Well, I do have a few things coming up. I think we're going to have a lovely woman from Illinois talking about the effects of what closing Guantanamo Bay will have on the local area in Illinois and in Missouri and across the nation. She's got some information. She's a military mom, and she's been following the situation for a long time. She's been interviewed on Fox News and various media across the country and from around the world, actually. She's quite certain that the people around the world are watching this issue with Guantanamo Bay with great interest. So we're going to have Bev Pearlson on. I think Lauren Maloney from Commuter Patriots is going to come on and give us a perspective on Amendment 3.
Good.
And I'm sure we'll talk to Ray Cuneo again, and we're going to try to probably fill in some blanks, if there are any blanks, because I haven't put everything together yet, but we're going to try to have Bill Thacker on and talk about Gulen schools.
Good, good. And quickly, in 10 words or less, what are Gulen schools?
Gulen schools are charter schools that are run are Turkish charter schools.
Okay.
And they are being funded publicly with your public money, and they're not necessarily what you may think they are.
Okay. And Thursday, then, that's Wednesday. That's the Culture Vigilante on Wednesday with Lisa, who is the Culture Vigilante. You can follow her frequently at culturevigilante.wordpress.com, right?
That's right.
And you can follow this United Homeschool at unitedhomeschool.wordpress.com. Am I right?
HomeschoolingUnited.wordpress.com.
Homeschooling United. I'm sorry. HomeschoolingUnited.wordpress.com. And Lisa blogs at both of those places frequently, and frequently you'll see a follow-up on those blogs on Wednesday night when the Culture Vigilante hits the airwaves at 7 p.m. On Thursday night at 7 p.m., the hillbilly himself, Kevin Harned, comes along with some hillbilly logic, some downright good Ozark common sense to apply to today's complicated world. Kevin's show is great. Sometimes he has some high-powered guests on. Sometimes he just comes on and rants for an hour, hour and a half, sometimes 2 hours. It's always, always entertaining. It's always informative. And it's always quite pertinent to the news of the day. Then next Friday night, of course, we will be back again, at least Lisa and I, for sure. And maybe Mike, maybe Kevin, maybe Terry, maybe Lisa. We never know who's going to drop in. And it will be the night after another presidential debate. I'm a little bit concerned now, after the last two debates, that expectations might be a little high for us, Lisa.
Not too worried about it, because if also the next presidential debate is going to be in a town hall forum, so I think that'll even be a little bit. I think it'll be a little bit more difficult for Barack Obama to. He's not good off the cuff, and I think when he's having questions thrown at him that are not being regulated by a moderator, I think he's going to be dancing.
Well, good. Let's hope so. And then what else? On Mondays, Mondays is the hour of truth with yours truly and almost always Lisa along for some good talk. We're spending the next Mondays between now and the election, except Election Eve, talking about the various initiatives on the ballot. This Monday coming up, we're going to specifically talk for the period with Lisa, who's a resident of St. Charles County, about the atrocity that's going on in St. Charles County. Has to be probably the most crowded ballot in the state, with not only the four state initiatives issued, ballot issues, but six of their own for a total of 10 ballot issues.
A total of six.
No. Oh, you have two?
We have six. Six charter initiatives on the St. Charles County ballot in addition to everything else from the state.
Right. So four from the state. That's a total of 10, right?
No. We have six in St. Charles County alone.
Right. And the state has four. So that's a total of 10 initiative issues on your ballot.
Okay, yes.
Right. Okay, so that's 10 things. No, that's all right. That's 10 things that a resident of St. Charles County has to be up on before they even walk into the poll. And that's insanity. I mean, something has got to be done about this, Lisa. I mean, they actually passed a law recently or debated it. I don't remember it passing in the last session. And if it didn't pass in the last session, it didn't pass because they were debating it in the last session, that said that all of these ballot initiatives had to wait for the next statewide election so that they could quit springing these things on you in special elections in your city or in your county when it was least expected. But my gosh, if this is what that's going to be, then that's bad. You know, I mean, you just can't study 10 damn things before you go vote.
Well, you know, and that's what I was saying at the top of the show. The chairman of our county council has the ability to not put things on the floor for debate if they think it's inappropriate. And, you know, if I were the chairman of the county council at that time, of course, you know, always easy to say when you're outside of the realm of reality, but, you know, I wouldn't put things up for debate, you know, when you have 2 weeks before it goes on the ballot.
And that's...
There's no time to vet the information, to do the studies, to get public input. There's none of that.
Right. And what you say is your implication that this is intentional is far more than an implication, because, I mean, if the average public citizen in St. Charles County has only found out about these things, say, in the last 3 weeks even, then there was a withholding even of the fact that this was going to be on the ballot, because those ballots had to be at the printing press a month ago?
Well, didn't it? I'm not sure if that was a month ago or not. It might have been just a couple of weeks
September. What was the absolute drop dead deadline for Todd was what?
Wasn't that around the 25th?
Okay, so the 25th, because that deadline was based on print day.
Yes.
Okay, so the 25th. So it's been 2 weeks now. 3 weeks. 2 weeks. Going on 3 weeks.
I don't know anything about those ballot initiatives till they walk into the voting booth.
Right, exactly right. But if you listen to Missouri Grassroots Radio on Monday night, you'll know all about them, because Lisa's going to bring all six of them. We're going to spend some time talking about them. Lisa's going to go over the issues with us. And Lisa, if you want to email those to me, I'll help you do some research on those between now and Monday. And we will tell you how to vote on those issues. And then we're going to go ahead the next several Mondays, and we're going to go into the rest of the ballot initiatives. We spent some time on the judges the other night. We're going to talk about we spent some time on the cigarette tax the other night. We're going to talk about the judges. We're going to talk about local control in St. Louis, and we're going to talk about something else. The judges, the local control, the cigarette tax, and the exchanges. Yeah, the exchanges. The Robin Carnahan exchanges. So we'll be talking about those. And then on Election Eve, on the Hour of Truth, we have a real treat. We're going to spend another 90 minutes with our great friend Cynthia Davis, who is just a hoot to be with. So be sure and join us for that. The Election Eve one should be really good. Cynthia's been working real hard, so she's been kind of tired, but we're going to try to make Election Eve more of a let your hair down kind of night and just have a good time with Cynthia as you folks get ready to go to the polls and vote. That's Missouri Grassroots Radio for tonight. This has been the Roundtable. Thanks, Lisa. I always love doing this with you.
Thanks, Dave. It's always a pleasure.
Okay. Listen, folks, be sure and tune in. Have a great weekend. Be sure and tune in on Monday night for the Hour of Truth, Wednesday night for the Culture Vigilante, Thursday night for Hillbilly Logic, and Friday night next for another debate issue of the Missouri Grassroots Roundtable.
God bless America.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.